in June 1988, so about 7 months, fast forward 7 months from the time of George's death, 4 a.m. one morning, just kind of rousing. I thought I had, was in a lucid dream, and I hadn't even thought about George in months, and there he was standing at the foot of my bed. Well, you know, I shook my head, and I tried to clear the cobwebs out, and I had what I thought was a lucid dream, but as my eyes opened up, he was still standing there, shimmering in an exquisite light body configuration. He looked at me and smiled, and it rocked, you know, my foundation of modern physics to the ground.
Well, but tell me then, I mean, as a mental health counselor, how do you begin to differentiate a lucid dream or, and you know, some sort of grief-driven, you know, apparition from your own consciousness to something which was cross-dimensional or transcendental?
I think all of those need to be looked at. All of these concerns you have and others have questioned me over the years.
Sure.
I think it's important to keep that in perspective. Absolutely. Could it be an illusion? Yes. Could it be a lucid dream? Yes. But it was not. Because, number one, I was fully conscious when I saw him standing there, and it was the real person. I mean, you know, I don't want to get too melodramatic at this point, but can you imagine those who claim to have seen Jesus, for example, resurrected, as the scriptures say, and that gets into a whole thing about beliefs, I understand, but the point is, you know, you cannot convince another person that you've
right.
had a metaphysical experience. So, but I'm a very analytical person, very critical thinker, and I demand a lot from myself before I would even begin to share this type of information with another human being, especially, you know, to millions of Coast
sure.
to Coast listeners.
Sure,
so,
and I appreciate your candor on being open about that, but tell me a little bit more about how you – what you experienced as a, because you're talking about him being physical, but if he's shimmering in a different state, then it seems extra physical. It doesn't seem like what we would consider to be an ordinary physical understanding. So it's almost like he was in some sort of excited atomic state or some of sort.
I think that's a good way to put it. The way I put it now, I didn't have the word at my grasp then, but it was definitely a holographic projection. He was in a physical type body. In other words, he had the form that George always had. He right down to the just minute details in his face. He had a lot of etching in his face from the sun, from being born and raised in southern Louisiana, and I could see that. And then, of course, the facial feature was just there, right, you know, face to face with me. And it lasted about probably, I would think, about a minute, 45 seconds to a minute. And in that time, there was a telepathic communication that came to me. It was impressed upon my mind so forcefully that I was immediately just consumed by the experience. So, I mean, I understand why people have near-death experiences now.
Right.
You know, it takes them about 7 years before they quit, you know, playing with their lips. I mean, where they can talk coherently about
sure.
what happened to them. I understand that it took me years in to be able to articulate this experience.
So eventually you come to a point where you feel like you can talk about what happened. So tell us what happened. Was there actual speaking, or was it a telepathic communication? Was there a kind of third eye understanding of what was going on?
Yes. Today, I mean, I have the words and I have the science behind me now, but then all I did was have an overwhelming experience that proved to me, to my satisfaction at least, that we survived death, that what we're talking about is consciousness, that consciousness was being projected to my consciousness. In other words, he appeared in a form that I would immediately recognize as him. And number two, the communication that came to me was overwhelming joy, I would guess. It was a feeling of, hey, John, this is George. I'm fine. Relax, buddy. Take her easy. You know, don't bust a head gasket over this life
sure.
and death stuff, because it ain't that way. Okay.
Yeah, you know, and I love that. And I love the fact that happens. I watch some of these shows on television where they'll have a psychic who can see the past the loved ones that have passed that are around these people in the audience. And he always has the same message, whomever it is or she ever, it always says the same thing, which is they're fine. They want you to know they're in a better place. They're happy. They're joyful. Don't be sad. And I think that's fabulous, except, you know, at no point does anybody ever say, oh, they're in hell. And your father is roasting on an open spit right now, and Satan is you know, torturing your grandmother. There's it never happens like that. So I mean, I'm glad that that message came forward to you. But and it's nice to know that our friends are okay in this other world. That it's very reassuring. But what else was Trent? Was there knowledge? Was there a kind of was there an important message to you other than I'm okay that was being communicated to you?
Yes, it was a very complex symbolism that was going on, in fact. George, first of all, was dressed in this Hawaiian shirt with a beachcomber hat, which was very comical, and I think even at the time I smiled internally, at least. Now, I said, you know, even to myself, I had a sense of humor. I said, now, this is really a good hallucination, John. You have one, you know, let's do it right. But listen to this, Ian. It's even more complex. In this beachcomber hat band, there was a series of flattened metal beer cans.
Uh-oh.
Now, here's the point. I thought that was very comical, and he and I had, you know, toasted a few in the military days for sure, and he was a raging Cajun, and I'm a Scottish by ancestry. So, you know, we had thrown a few pints back in our day.
I bet.
But now here's the thing that really floored me about a year later, after I reflected and started doing research on this experience and near-death experiences, etc. And what came to me was this recollection that in the funeral home in Huntsville, Alabama, November 1987, when his family had come in from Louisiana to North Alabama for the funeral, they were sitting in this funeral home. This was a couple days after his death. And I went very reverently up to the front of the funeral home in the casket and looked down on George's face. He's dressed in a very beautiful new suit, etc. And I was in shock, and I was trying to, you know, somehow cope with the situation. And in my mind, I said, as I looked at George's face, I said, hey, buddy, a joke is a joke. Let's go get a beer. I don't know why I said that, but that was what came to me. And I wanted to just, I was trying to humor myself, obviously.
Sure.
Well, I didn't think any more about it. I mean, it was just a spontaneous, silly little thing to come to your mind, but that's what happened. Well, 6 months later, I see George. How was he going to communicate to me telepathically or any other way that he heard me at the moment I stood in front of that casket and said, hey, buddy, let's go get a beer? He projected the Hawaiian shirt, the party hat, the beachcomber hat with the beer cans, and I knew in this telepathic communication he was telling me, John, this is for real. Remember, buddy, I'm a physicist. I understand light physics. Optics was his specialty, in fact, Ian. He had a master's degree in optics. This guy knew technology. He knew physics and cosmology. So he was giving me a 100% mind-to-mind reality check, if you will, about a other dimension that we hear about a lot today. However, this was a real experience.